I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends, or you're at the bar, or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
It is finally draft week. We've been talking about it for a while. We do have all of your takes locked in here, guys. Don't forget about the time capsule.
Oh, yeah, the time capsule that you ripped in real time when it was going on that looks lovely on
the
set.
I thought it was going to be a bottle of wine. I didn't know what.
No wine.
You don't even like wine. How would you recognize a wine bottle?
I've seen these. It doesn't, just because I don't drink it doesn't mean I don't know what some of the boxes
they come in. My parents have the nicest wine fridge I've seen in a house at their place in Arizona that they've just turned in what I call big fridge.
Yeah.
Because that's all they'd use it for, is just a big excess fridge.
Yeah.
It's this big, ornate steel door, and inside, it's just like Bud Light seltzers
knows
what else.
Yeah, really?
What?
We don't Chris doesn't like wine either?
We don't drink. No, neither one of us has ever gotten into wine.
Well, I'll come over. You can put some wine in there.
Many people have taken the wine out of there and had it.
Yes. My mom simply needs to smell an alcohol in order to acquire its divine powers.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
That's
lightweight of the century. Love you, Mom, but you know it's true.
So Locke's in here. No vino. but go to their house, apparently, if you want some in Arizona. Field Yates will join us to give us his take on the draft, but I want to get some of your last takes heading up to Thursday. Let's talk about the NFC East first. And the Commanders, in particular, we have been talking over the last several months about what they're going to do at number two overall. If we take a look at the DraftKings odds, Jaden Daniels remains the favorite at minus 155. Interesting move, though, on Drake May. He was plus 330 over the weekend, that all the way down to plus 130. And as we say, guys, this is sort of just based off of all of the mock drafts and the hearsay and the smoke and mirrors. So, does that mean anything to you that those odds shifted? Do you think it's Daniels? And then we'll go through the rest of
it. So we're going to kind of break down team needs by division for the rest of the week here. We're going to do the NFC East and AFC East today. And so it makes sense, I think, to start with 2 and 3. You've got the Washington Commanders from the NFC East at number 2. You've got the Patriots from the AFC East at number 3. And, Dad, I think this is in line with the trend that I think we're going to see this week, which is water finding its level again. It has been a long draft season for certain prospects that we thought were always going to be in one particular place. Whether it was Drake May, who was long looked at as a guy talked about with Caleb Williams as maybe the number 1 pick, whether it's been Brock Bowers, who people have debated positional value in his position in the draft, whether it's a guy like Olu Fashanu out of Penn State at offensive tackle, who would have been a top 5 pick and probably the first tackle if he came out last year and was talked about a lot lower than that in the lead up to this draft. I've seen places where all of those guys have been talked about a lot more in line with, hey, maybe Brock Bowers is going number 10 overall to the Jets. Maybe Olu is going to be the second tackle off the board. And maybe Drake May, who I've said all along, if I was Washington, I would take at number 2, might actually still be the guy after all of this time and all of these leaks and people talking and different things that have tried to get Jaden Daniels into this conversation.
I think Jaden Daniels is going number 2. I think Washington is going to believe his upside is higher than Drake May, that he has a higher ceiling because of what he adds in the running game, kind of like a Lamar rushing for over 1,000 yards, throwing the ball well as well. They helped in the offseason on the offensive side with a couple of linemen, Allegretti from Kansas City, who was the backup but started in the Super Bowl. Tyler Biadasz from the Dallas Cowboys, he went over there as well. Austin Eckler goes over there from the Chargers to Washington. So I think it's going to be Jaden Daniels as well.
It's a tough take from you.
I mean,
you have a lot of bad ones, but you just continue to want to sign up to be wrong right in my face.
I'm telling you what I think they're going to do, and that's all that matters. That's all that matters is
what they are going to be wrong through you as a conduit. You're a vessel for the incorrectness.
What?
Yeah.
Well, because you think they're going to take May.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they're.
Do you think that you? So you think not? It's not. There's a difference of who you think they should take and who you think they're going to take.
I think they're going to take Drake May because I think they should take Drake May.
Okay,
I'm combining the two of them together. Wonder Twin powers activate. They are now Drake May as a Washington Commander. Because I do think for Drake May, like, you listen to a lot of people, Dan Orlovsky and company, say, hey, he needs to sit a year because there's upside here, but there's also a rawness to this game. I tend to side more on the Nate Tice side of things, where I think he's a little bit more ready to go than some people have portrayed.
I do as well. I think he's more ready to go than some people portray, but I still think it's going to be Jaden Daniels.
And, I mean, at the end of the day, he is sort of like what NFL people can't resist. Big old boy.
Yeah,
big
old arm. Yes, like he is.
He's the prototype body type of this draft class there. So, because as you look at this Washington team, quarterback's the obvious need, maybe offensive tackle a little bit still here. You lost some guys defensively in that defensive backfield as well. Kendall Fuller, Cam Curl. So there's plenty of needs. This Washington roster is by no means like a good one all the way across the board. You gave away all your pass rushers last year at the trade deadline, so you've certainly got to continue to improve there. But quarterback going to be the overwhelming need there. Dad, New England, also, one of the most interesting teams in this draft, as we seesaw to the AFC East for a moment here before we go through the rest of them here. New England's got that third overall pick. How are you feeling about the potential of a trade out here? That's been the Patriot move for the longest time. Obviously, whole new regime in there now. But do you think we see some of the same things as we finally get the draft?
It's like that natural thought with them that they're going to make a move because that's what we've seen for a couple of decades now. But I don't know what the new regime is going to think. And I've said time and time again, what's their grade on the third-rated quarterback? Because that's basically what it's going to come down to. There's going to be two quarterbacks taken above them. So what was their grade on them and then the next quarterback that's available? If that grade, and this is where you get the reach part. If it's close to being, yes, it's worthy of the third pick, you're going to take them. If it's a little farther back, that's where you start to wonder, okay, what's my grade of the third quarter, if the first two are gone, let's just say it's Caleb and it's Jaden. So you look at the next group of quarterbacks. What's your grade on them? If they're close.
Well, if you're close, but also it's, hey, the financial savings with rookie quarterbacks are so much to where you have a comparatively lesser chance of hitting, but you need a comparatively lesser chance in order to make it worth your while. That's why that position sort of skews, Claudia, the idea of, hey, if you don't have a guy as a top five grade, but he's a quarterback with a top 15 grade, you probably got to take him there, especially when you're the Patriots. You're sitting right there, and you don't have the penalty that comes with having to trade up like some of these other teams might.
And everyone's saying, well, if you move around the pieces, there's a lot more holes we have to fill. The Patriots. The Patriots have to fill a lot more holes than just the quarterback position. But then if you wait, then who are you going to get next year? Because that draft's not very sexy when it comes to quarterback.
If your grade says franchise quarterback, then you take one. You don't even think about it. You take one. If your grades are close with the next few quarterbacks, you can take the chance and drop back a little bit and still get one of those guys. If you think one of those guys is in close enough grade to the guy that you're going to not take when you trade back. That's what you're going through right now.
And Elliot Wolf has been very vocal about looking at a quarterback at that position. He says, yeah, we're going to take the calls, but I do strongly believe they'll stay with quarterback here.
I think ultimately I've been a little bit slower to go on this because I still kind of think there's Caleb Williams, Drake May, and then a little gap before you get to everybody else. But everything we've heard about Jaden Daniels, the player, his work ethic, all the stuff behind the scenes that we don't know watching the tape. Like, I voted for him to win the Heisman. He was the guy first on my ballot when it came to this fall. So
but
it's
that
not
means
like
nothing going into the NFL.
No, but I guess I'm just to say it's not like I don't appreciate Jaden Daniels' game. I think his game is exemplary. I think there was no player in college football who bent defenses to his gravity and improved the situation for players around him the way Jaden Daniels did in college. There's a difference in what he can do with his game to the NFL at the next level that's part of this conversation. But I just want to make it clear, like, I love the way this kid plays ball. And then you hear about how hard he's worked on stuff from the neck up, what he's already done in going about improving as a player, and how that's a great positive sign for an NFL franchise who's bringing this guy in. Like, oh no, he's displayed aptitude. Like, he learns well, all these different things that you want as you're trying to figure out all these players. And so I think New England, if he's on the board, would ultimately take him at that spot. Yeah, you've got other holes to fill. You could trade back. A guy like Marvin Harrison Jr., you're never going to go wrong betting on that guy in this draft if you're a team near the top. But I think, Claudia, to your point, the uncertainty around next year's draft and the fact that, again, you've got this opportunity at three. You're not the 49ers that had to trade up three first-round picks to get there. You are here right now and have a chance to take a quarterback
in that spot. I think they're going to.
So
yeah, I agree.
We've got that start to this now. I want to work through the rest of the NFC East before we get to the AFC East here now, Dad, because I think one of the next most interesting teams in the draft is going to be the New York Giants. They sit there at sixth overall, and everyone wondering about quarterback with them. Do you think they should try and reach on a quarterback in this draft if they've got the opportunity?
I think they're going to wait, in all honesty. I think they're going to go for the wide receiver. They picked up a couple of O-linemen in the offseason. So I think they're not, even though I think a lot of people believe they should. I go back to the draft when they took Daniel Jones, and, well, we were in Nashville, I think, and we were all like, wow,
stunned.
Okay. And they gave him the money as well. I don't think he's secure there as the man going into the future, but I don't think they're going to go quarterback here at that particular pick at number six overall, and I don't think they want to trade out of that. They want to get some value for that pick, and I think they can get a wide receiver.
I will say DraftKings right now is Malik Nabers plus 150 as the favorite to go on. Yeah.
That's, and I mean, every mock draft I've seen right now has Nabers going to the Giants. And while John Mara gave the green light very publicly, like, everyone from the Giants was very much like, I've told them if there's a quarterback, they like go after it. Everybody, if a team really wanted to trade up to go get a quarterback, you know what they wouldn't do? Tell everyone. Yeah. So that to me was the ultimate siren going off that maybe this is a little bit of overt gamesmanship. I do ultimately think this is the last year of Daniel Jones' money there. There's a lot of people that still believe in him. My buddy, former roommate Kyle Rudolph, who played in New York for a year, says, hey, Daniel's got the juice. Like, that's a guy with talent. He's got the stuff you want as a leader to be able to make that happen. You just got to give him weapons. And so whether that certainly could be offensive line, I think you still probably need to help him out with. Evan Neal hasn't developed the way you wanted him to opposite Andrew Thomas, who's playing like an all-pro. I think getting him a weapon like Malik Nabers that can stretch the field changes the math for this Giants offense that desperately needs it after trying to be more pass-centric last year and failing to really make that transition before Daniel's injuries started to become part of that conversation here. Dad, the Philadelphia Eagles all the way down at 22 right now, rounding out the NFC. Most people looking at this roster, we mentioned before, tons of coaching changes this year with Vic Fangio and Kellen Moore coming over at the coordinator spot. What's the biggest need for them in your eyes?
I think one of the best pickups was the offseason of Saquon Barkley to go with Jalen Hurts. Sure. We talked about the new coordinators. I think it's probably going to look at cornerback. And maybe Cooper DeJean from now, is he going to play corner? Is he going to go to safety? We don't know.
I mean, he is white, so they're probably going to try and make him.
I know. The kid from Iowa. They're talking about possibly a tackle. But you got Lane Johnson, you got Mailata, who they just gave the money to. You're going to kick him down, someone inside, because Cam Jurgen's going to go to center
to
take over for Kelsey.
Now.
So I probably see the defensive side of the ball here.
I could see if there's a corner they really like on the board. A lot of people.
The top two are going to be gone.
Yeah, the top two. Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo, probably going to be gone at that point. Terrion Arnold out of Alabama. Yeah. We expect to be gone by that point. But like I mentioned, Nate Wiggins out of Clemson, a little bit on the smaller side, but could be a guy that's still available for them there. I wouldn't discount tackle. Lane Johnson getting very long in the tooth right now, and this Philly team has been proactive. Cam Jurgens was a guy that Jason Kelsey helped scout while he was still on the team.
Yep.
That could be his potential replacement now going forward. So I wouldn't put that past, especially if there's a guy they like. Like, I've seen mocks of J.C. Latham out of Alabama, who I don't know if he's going to be there at this rate. That's the question
that's
for a
little
lot of these guys.
I agree,
but there are so many good tackles
in
this class.
There are.
This has always been a strength of the Philadelphia Eagles. So I would say, especially knowing this team, you never go – like, I always think it's a good decision to keep making your strength stronger. And I think if you get a J.C. Latham down there, God, if Olu Fashanu somehow fell this far here, you combine him with the offensive line coaching you're going to get there with Jeff Stoutland, and I think that could be a home run there. The Dallas Cowboys, not far behind them at 25, hoping some of those good O-line names fall past them because, Dad, based on this offseason, a Cowboys team that struggled to run and stop the run last year needs to address both, and we'd imagine O-line's going to get the nod early after.
Do you go inside here? You go with the center, the kid from Oregon? I mean, you lost Biotis, as I said, to Washington.
Yeah.
Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon, who we had on the show. Do you go down that road? Because they lost, obviously, Biotis, as I talked about, Tyron Smith as well, the left tackle. So you wonder, this is a heavy, heavy O-line draft, especially you could be talking eight or so O-linemen. Eight or ten O-linemen going in the first round.
It depends what you want to do with Tyler Smith, your former first-round draft pick out of Tulsa.
Right, you kick him out to left tackle.
Who's played left tackle when Tyron's been hurt. He's played inside. So he gives you the versatility to kind of go with best available here. Jordan Morgan, who will be joining us on the show this week, the tackle out of Arizona, who, true dancing bear, watching this guy, ton of fun, as athletically gifted as any player in the class here. If he tightens up his hands, could be a world of hurt for someone because this is a really talented athlete out of Arizona, but I think him, the home run for them would be if Graham Barton from Duke somehow falls far enough here.
Probably
guy that can play inside. I would doubt it, but if somehow it happened, a lot of people expect him to actually be the first interior guy off the board over Jackson Powers Johnson. If he somehow fell here, be mana from heaven. Cowboys fans would be sprinting to the podium to make that pick there. Let's go to the AFC East now. We already talked about the Patriots with that third overall pick. Let's look at the Jets, their first pick at 10 overall. And, Dad, this is kind of where the Brock Bowers button has all of a sudden settled late in the draft cycle here.
Don't overthink.
Are you surprised by that? Do you think that's the right call?
Don't overthink it. Take Brock Bowers. I mean, remember, they picked up O-linemen in the offseason. John Simpson, Morgan Moses, Tyron Smith that we talked about, though he's, you know, you picked him up because you expect him to play, but he's had some injury issues, obviously.
Unfortunately, at this point in Tyron's career, finishing an entire season playing every game is just not something you can count on. Lock Hall of Famer, one of my favorite players of this, of like my adult lifetime, a guy that I came out of high school with, but it's the reality of this situation.
You got Garrett Wilson, you picked up Mike Williams, you got Breece Hall, you got to get, you got to load up for Aaron Rodgers, Brock Bowers. All the talk of, Brock Bowers, he isn't really kind of the tight. Stop it. He is going to be one of the best picks of this draft. We have seen what rookie tight ends have done, especially split out, slot, or like a wide receiver. This guy is going to come and make an impact in the league. Don't think about it. Take him at 10.
He is one of, if not the most versatile offensive weapons in this draft. You can definitely say that. And, you know, you mentioned all the guys they picked up that are all in line to start right now. Elijah Vera Tucker, who's been a really good player across multiple positions for them on that O-line. There's still part of me that thinks, especially given the talent there, the Jets are trying to thread a weird needle right now where this is probably the last year we can count on Aaron Rodgers being the guy to potentially get them in Super Bowl range. But after that, I think you're still trying to build that foundation for whatever comes next to make sure you're a viable team. And I think O-line goes a long way in that. Tyron's the same way. He's not going to be your forever left tackle there with the Jets. And so I could think O-line there at 10, depending on who's available. And there should still be some really good names open there. I'd probably give the edge to O-line over Brock Bowers, but again, Brock Bauer is one of those players at this point, water finding its level for the way we talk about one of the most talented prospects in the draft, even if you're not going to be able to put him on the end of the line of scrimmage and have him be a guy blocking DNs down in and down out.
Right.
Like anyone cares about that with tight ends at
this
point all that much. The Dolphins down at 21, Dad. This team, electric offense last year. O-line seems to be the thing a lot of people, but there's been a lot of change defensively and a lot of injury to their edge rushers at the end of last season.
They lost a lot of D linemen, but they picked up a lot of defensive players in the offseason, not really D linemen.
Christian Wilkins, probably the biggest name they lost.
Raekwon Davis, they lost a couple of D tackles, lost a linebacker, a safety, an edge rusher in Van Ginkle. So they've lost some defensive players, picked up a few, as I mentioned, Shaq Barrett, edge rusher, Jordan Poyer, the safety as well, Kendall Fuller. They picked up, so they kind of replaced that as well. It does seem to be O-line. I mean, boy, when in doubt in the first round, say O-line, because that's going to be probably at least a third of the
first round.
If I gave
you the choice of these guys here in J.C. Latham, the tackle out of Alabama, Jared Verse, the pass rusher out of Florida State, or Byron Murphy, if he was still available, the defensive tackle out of Texas, all areas that they kind of need help with right now, which would you
go for? I'm a big Murphy fan. Plus, they lost, especially Wilkins in the middle, but a couple of D tackles. I'm a big Murphy fan. I really like what he does at a little over 300 pounds. great feet, making penetration like he does in the backfield. So I'm a big fan of him.
He's been the biggest riser, I think, in this draft class post-combine. The show that he put on there combined with the great tape that was already in line and the premium for D-tackles in the NFL. I don't think he'll be available here. I think this spot is an O-line spot. If Troy Fautanu, who was a star coming off the combine, somehow falls down this way, position flexibility on a line that's had to move guys around because of injury at times, I think he fits perfectly with the wide zone stuff that they want to run there. He'd be the home run pick if that somehow worked out for them there. Again, do backflips for a Miami Dolphins team that wants to continue to solidify that group in front of Tua. Dad, finish up with the Bills here. 28th pick overall. Seems obvious. Wide receiver, given the fact that Stephon Diggs is now wearing Houston Texans colors.
Yeah. I think that's where you go. It's just going to be, who is it going to be? Donnie Mitchell, the kid from Texas? Who's going to be around at that? Does Ladd McConkey get into the end of the first round?
I doubt it.
I do too, but I've seen his name bandied about a little bit as well. But it's... while we talked about an O-line deep draft, it's a deep wide receiver draft as well.
And this has been Bill's team that last year, when they made the coordinator change midway through the season, really leaned on the run. And we didn't see as much Stephon Diggs down the stretch. I think there is that need. Gabe Davis also gone. You still, I think, need that true big-bodied X receiver. And so A.D. Mitchell probably fits that the most. You'll talk about a couple of guys in that range. When we talked to Field Yates, I believe he had Xavier Worthy mocked, who's opposite end of the spectrum. Small guy, but lightning fast, combine record for the 40-yard dash. We'll talk to Field about why he thinks that he could end up being a good fit for Buffalo as they make that transition to the next step of their franchise around Josh Allen. Coming up next, we'll make the transition to the next group of games in the NBA coming up tonight here on Gojo and Goalie. I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends or you're at the bar or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume. Imported by Mast Jägermeister U.S., White Plains, New York.
We're back here, Gojo and Golic. Gojo and Golic in studio.
Yeah.
All three of us here at DraftKings Studio in Boston.
So close I can hit you.
Why you gotta, and we're hurting each other.
Stop it.
Here.
I will stab you with my pen.
Do it. I'll call HR. You want blood on this nice couch?
So this doesn't happen. Let's talk hoop, shall we? Let's get back to some basketball for Cash It or Trash It. Presented by DraftKings. Stay tuned to hear everything that DraftKings has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for details. Guys, we got three games tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Game two of round one, Magic. Cavs, who doesn't want to talk about that game? Magic catching 5.5 there. 76ers catching 5 against the Knicks. And then the Nuggets, 7.5-point favorites against the Lakers. My question to you, senior, cashing or trashing either, well, I guess any of the three underdogs to cash?
Underdogs? Ooh. Oh, man. You got Embiid, who's going to be hurting. Wow.
I stumped him.
I don't think I can cash any of them.
Okay, is that, trashing
I'm trashing them all.
You can do whatever you want.
All.
Trashing them all.
Trashing every underdog
with
the points.
I'll say if there's going to be one, I would go Philly just because we don't know still like the boom or bust potential with Joel if he's feeling good that night and could go off. And the series just reeks of a rock fight anyway. These are two teams that both want to clang and bang. This New York Knicks team's hallmarks, physicality. So I'll say if anyone's got a chance of making this close, it would be Philadelphia.
No. Answer the question. Are you cashing it?
Yeah.
Are you saying that's going to happen?
I'm cashing Philadelphia plus 5.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So you'll take the 5.
Stop it.
I'm surprised. So 7.5 isn't enough for either of you. Can you Can we behave?
Can we stop? I'm going to tell your mother.
I'm beating dad's ass the way the Nuggets are going to beat the Lakers again. How about that?
All right, so 7.5, not enough for you despite the Lakers looking good for to start that game.
I guess that's the thing, though, is they looked good. The Nuggets didn't have to even get to the free throw line or didn't have to have their other guys play that great.
This doesn't end well.
And they still managed to hawk them.
I'm trashing it all, but I would agree with Mike saying if one was going to happen, it would be the 76ers. But we just don't know how healthy Embiid is going to be.
Okay. I can't believe you laughed at the Cleveland Cavaliers thing there. You're afraid, it's okay for me. It's not even okay for me to do that. We should put respect on the Cleveland Cavaliers' name for what they've done. You're from Ohio. You're from Cleveland.
Listen,
you should be much more supportive of the home team than this. The Kelseys have now usurped as the most prominent Cleveland Cavaliers fans out there.
They're the hot name. I get it.
But I mean, they're out here supporting the team right now. You just laughed at them.
I'm supporting them. Want them to
win. By laughing at the notion of their series here? I don't know.
In what way? I didn't laugh. It's just a shame they're not going to be on network television at all. The game's going to be on NBA TV. I mean, you know, they won the first game in a great fashion. Now, Orlando didn't shoot well at all in that one, but that's partly they missing shots and Cleveland playing some really good defense. So, of course, I want my Cavaliers to win. I mean, come on. Don't start getting me in trouble back home.
You're doing that by yourself. I didn't ask for any of this.
I didn't cash, you know, Orlando in this one. It's not like I'm picking them to cover.
I had to say within the first few minutes of watching that game, I tweeted out, Cavs are going to have an absolute field day. Because I said, if the Magic's defense doesn't show up, the offense just doesn't have enough.
They don't have it. They didn't shoot well, like I said, in Cavs defense.
So let me ask you this, then. If you don't want to bet a side, I'm looking at some of the points props here. You can get even money, plus 100 for Donovan Mitchell, 26 in the hook. So he needs 27 or more points.
I'll take that.
You like that?
Yeah.
Other side, though, Banchero, 22.5. All he needs is 23. Do you like the Magic to show up a little bit more on offense?
Man, Paolo, hell of a player, too. Both those guys went over those totals in game one. So they're asking you to take it right there.
I mean, he's going to have to, right?
Has to.
He has to.
All on his shoulders.
I think I'd be more comfortable with Donovan Mitchell.
Me too.
Donovan Mitchell's fascinating to me just because it feels like ever since the bubble season where he was one of the star turn guys that we saw do really well there. That was obviously the Utah Jazz version of him. But now in Cleveland, for a team whose hallmark has been defense so much, Jared Allen and what he's meant to that team too. I think what he had, like 18 rebounds in that first game against Orlando has been exceptional there. But if they're going to get a ton of points there, I do think Donovan Mitchell's got to be the guy.
Yeah, and he was he had 30 points in that game. And he's been slowed a lot by that bruised knee bone. He's got the bone bruise that was keeping him out. They're the ones they lost to, the Knicks in 5, I think, last year. But Orlando was just awful. Orlando was 19 of 30 from the free throw land, 8 of 37 from threes. Again, give Cleveland credit for playing some defense there, but their shooting was just off. They have to be on offense.
Yeah. Okay. Any props that stand out to you from Sixers-Knicks? I'm looking at Embiid. Okay, so that's one thing, too, when we talk about injuries. The books don't always know, but it's usually a good sign if the numbers are up. And right now, Embiid's point prop, 29.5, plus 105 to the over. Now, usually with me in an injury, if I don't feel great about it, either minutes limited or he just isn't 100%, I tend to want to lean under 30.
I think I would lean under that as well. I mean, two days coming off that. Now, he did go back out and play the second half, but he did not look good. He's a guy that wants to go out, and he's going to play through a lot. As I mentioned, yesterday had to be a tough, sore day for him.
And, that's talking about the injury side of it. The other side of it, and this came up in the play-in, is still Joel Embiid's wind at this point.
Yeah.
And what have we heard from almost every NBA player is a playoff game is basically like playing two regular season games in one. And so remember the images of Joel from the play-in game where he's standing over in the corner, hands on knees, trying to catch his breath. All you hear from the coaching staff is, we wish we could have gotten him more minutes in the ramp-up to this to try and get his wind ready to shoulder this load. And so that's, I think, as much as anything, he's a tough guy. Like, the reason Philly loves this dude so much is because as you saw him wincing through the second half, there wasn't really a question in a lot of people's mind if Joel was going to want to be out there. He's always going to want to go. That's why Philly loves this dude. But on the other side, it's, hey, he did come back out there and go. He is dealing with that. And now with only this little bit of rest in between, you've got a guy who's going to come in with questions about conditioning.
And then as we talked about, the one game we haven't really talked about is Lakers and Nuggets again is who else can step up from the Lakers, yeah. right? We know LeBron and AD have to get their points if it's going to be close at all. Mm-hmm. But who's going to be that next person coming up and stepping up for them?
Yeah, Anthony Davis right now points it at 24.5, LeBron 25.5. So
I
around
go over
the same.
On the AD.
Yeah, AD over, well, okay, 25 or more.
This is the dance with AD, especially in the postseason, is you get this incredible output in game one, and what we've been asking Anthony Davis to do since he came over to the Lakers is take the baton from LeBron, be the guy every game that we right. can count on to do all this, mm-hmm. and what we've gotten instead is almost always in every other game roller coaster where, yeah, he'll still be an impactful defensive player, he still might show up in the rebound stats, but getting monster offensive numbers from him game in and game out has been the entire struggle of his Lakers tenure.
Let me ask you this then, because I usually like to look at combos, which I was going to say quickly on the Sixers side of things. Not that they're going to put Embiid out there as a decoy, but maybe he doesn't contribute as much in points, but he's more of a facilitator on the boards. I would look at Tyrese Maxey over on points. Maybe he's going to take a little bit more of that load. Just saying. Now, speaking of sort of Batman and Robin, AD, 40 in the hook. So 40.5 needs 41 or more points plus rebounds plus assists. Mm. So if AD is the guy, maybe it's not just all points. You talked about Bake on the boards as well. His line,
he's
32, 14, yeah. and 5.
Yeah, he's been a monster on the board. So
that's an
option. I think I go over on that, even though I understand what you're saying, Mike, about the up and down.
I'm tempted to just play history and say AD probably going to have a more quiet night.
Okay.
And again, this is a Denver team where the matchup's focused a lot more on him and how they distribute him defensively. Him and Jokic, really, who the matchups end up being in these series.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of that puts the onus on him in a way that makes me a little uncomfortable given history and given what we've seen from him in the way that sort of waxes and wanes. So I don't know. Hopefully we get that. That's really the only chance the Lakers have in the series, yeah. I think, is if you get Anthony Davis, who consistently blows up and puts pressure on Aaron Gordon in foul trouble here, Nikola Jokic potentially also getting a little bit off balance and having to shoulder more of that load. All of those things for a Lakers team that still have two of the best players on the planet with him and LeBron at their side.
Which of these three teams can make it a series? Orlando, 76ers, or LA?
I think the 76ers probably have a better chance of making this a series overall, mostly because I just think Denver is too good.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched enough of the Cleveland and Orlando series to really render an opinion on that.
The disrespect.
A man who has a lot of opinions on the draft and will be a part of the ABC coverage, Field Yates, going to be joining us to get us ready and smarter for Thursday on Gojo and Golic. It's Kentucky Derby time. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? Saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action. New customers can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in with code GOLIC, only on the DK Horse app. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 18 plus, 21 plus in certain states, to open or access an account and a resident of a state where DK Horse is available. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See terms at dkhorse.com. One per new customer. Match calculated on first deposit up to a maximum of $250. Deposit requires two-time playthrough of settled wagers within 168 hours. Bonus released in $25 increments. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See terms at dkhorse.com. All right, welcome back to Gojo and Golic. We are just days away from the start, finally, mercifully, sweet Christ, the NFL draft in Detroit. And I'd imagine someone who's extra excited for that is our next guest, our buddy ESPN NFL draft analyst, Field Yates, who's going to be part of the ABC draft coverage this year. And just to start there, Field, first and foremost, I've said this to you privately, no one deserves it more. I mean, I think the most versatile player ESPN has in their repertoire. I've gotten to do digital draft shows in the past, and I remember sitting around going, why the hell is Field here with us right now? He should be on TV with them. So, Dan, I think you agree here as well.
I would say 5-tool, except for the fact I don't know what his bench is.
Oh, no, sure. You remember Beef Yates from back in the day.
That's back in the day.
Don't let his disrespect your bench
That's
here,
back
Field.
In the day.
Yeah, yeah. I say there's a little bit of dad strength that's been added, so I feel better about my bench these days than I did a few years ago. But yeah, still lacking in that department. You know, I went back to my alma mater this past weekend, Wesleyan, which is like 30 minutes from West Hartford, where you know, the area that of course is close to ESPN, where many of us live. And it was a reminder that like I actually used to lift weights with some regularity. What the heck happened to me? I'm falling off. Like I need to get back on my get back on my weight horse. I need to start posting some rise and grind pics to feel better. But thanks to both of you for the very kind words. And Gojo, I do miss those digital draft shows. We had some fun, and you know, I think the draft to me, like, everybody knows a lot of the top of the board, and I think a lot of us have a general sense of how things can go. So I've always felt like a great draft broadcast was one that provided some entertainment. And think about some of the great moments that we had that have lived on in infamy for 5, 6, 7 years now. So I miss the draft shows on the digital format with that great crew there. But it's cool to see everybody who was a part of that show thriving at a lot of different shops these days.
It absolutely is. It's birthed a lot of really promising careers. Yours, you know, included as a part of that. And now we get to this point where you mentioned the excitement starting to tick up, and feel draft week is always interesting because we hear so many things for so long. And then all of a sudden we start to hear the real rumblings here from both your time inside NFL buildings to now covering the NFL draft. Why do you think we see such an uptick in headlines leading into the days coming up?
Yeah, I think that probably one is that, you know, there are obviously a lot of great sporting events taking place right now, but we're close enough to the event that like people are descending upon the location of the event. The buzz just takes on a whole new life. I thought it was really interesting, and I'm sure you guys saw at least snippets of it. Belichick was on with Pat McAfee last week, and we'll be on with him again on Thursday night. So the good news for me, by the way, as a quick aside, is I can have the worst draft analysis ever this week, because we've got Saban and Belichick doing respective draft analysis themselves, and no one's going to give a crap what I say because they're going to be listening to those guys instead. So I can call like five guys a bust to become Hall of Famers or vice versa, and I'll be in the clear. But Belichick was talking about how, like, you know, pretty much everything that you hear right now, like most of it's coming from the agents at this time of the draft. He said within 12 hours of the draft beginning, you got might get a little bit of truth because teams have realized really not that much left that they can do, that things can change. So I think that's probably part of it. It's just like, you know, the number of people who are talking. And while, you know, this has kind of become my life, you know, the draft stuff, you know, I've been sort of living it since basically the end of last year's draft. You know, there are so many people that have different roles that are kind of getting onto the scene now, right? And some of these insiders who have been busy with free agency and coaching hires throughout the month of January and all the things that take place on the natural NFL calendar are more and more invested in the draft. And you're seeing more and more intel being dropped, including that from our guy Shefty, who this morning unloaded a notebook. And while a lot of the information, I think I realize I have to take with a grain of salt, when Shefty speaks, I listen. So this morning I had to redo a couple of things in my final mock draft based on some of the stuff that he was hearing.
Well, you know, you mentioned Belichick, and we're so used to them doing something, moving normally, and they're sitting at the three slot, and you wonder, is that going to be the first place we see something? Because that's what we naturally think. But now he's gone, different regime there. So is it like, do they stay and pick that quarterback, or do they continue what they've continued to do for the last couple of decades and make a move out of there?
Yeah, when the Packers hired their current GM, Brian Gutekunst, even though it was an internal hire, like, things shifted. And I'm starting to wonder if the Patriots, who I guess ironically have a former Packers exec, Elliot Wolf, now running the shop there, at least on the scouting side, are going to see a similar sort of shift. Yes, they're still the Patriots, and yes, he's been in that system for 4 or 5 years, whatever it is, prior to this spring. But I do wonder if this Patriots team will look a little bit more sort of normal during the draft, right? Part of Belichick's mastery for so many years was having his own board and ignoring what people said he should or should not do. And it worked for many, many years to great success. They were leaner in the draft over the past 4 to 5 years. And so, you know, part of the reason why that roster took shape the way that it did, and part of the reason why they struggled this past season. But the Patriots need to keep it simple this year, guys. And I believe this personally, and we'll see what happens come Thursday night. But I really believe that there are three quarterbacks that merit top three consideration many, many years, if not every year. And Caleb Williams, JT Daniels, and Drake May. So the third pick for the Patriots was such a valuable draft slot, even if it was a lot of pain for them to get to that spot. I would just sit there, pick three, and I would take whichever of those three quarterbacks falls to us, which is not going to be Caleb Williams, and it sounds like it probably won't be Jaden Daniels. So I'd be having my eyes on Drake May, and while we can talk about the seasoning he needs and how this past season was inferior to 2022, Those things can be true. It can also be true that he is 21 years old, 6'4", 229 pounds, has an absolute rocket for an arm, durable, has versatility as a runner as well. There's so many things that I like about Drake May that I would make it easy on yourself this year if you're the Patriots. I haven't dismissed J.J. McCarthy being in the mix for pick number three, but if it were my decision to make, I would just take whichever of those top three quarterbacks is sitting there waiting for me.
Those certainly going to dictate a lot of the first round, but we mentioned the Patriots trading back. Field, who do you think is the best candidate for a trade-up? Which team come draft night would you say has the best chance of giving us that shocking moment where something big happens that breaks up what most people think could?
Yeah, I'm going to shy away from the Vikings only because they've been discussed ad nauseum and they kind of like planted their flag on the possibility of a trade up when they made that deal with Houston, when Houston sent them pick 23 in exchange for a couple of seconds, including one next year, which was then repurposed to send to Buffalo as part of the Stephon Diggs trade. So a couple other teams that would be sort of interesting or compelling to me, certainly the Broncos and the Raiders for the quarterback reasons. But what I have my eye on, and I'm not trying to just like, you know, tug at the heartstrings of Mike Golic Jr. here, but we've all talked about how great this offensive tackle class is, along with how great this wide receiver class is. The offensive tackle class is not as deep as the wide receiver classes. We're going to have a run that at some point dries up, and I think it's going to be somewhere in the 20s. But you could also see teams that are picking it, you know, anywhere from 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, et cetera, who are saying, we need to get up five or six spots because, yes, there are a lot of good offensive tackles, but we happen to believe that one of these guys stands above the rest. So this would be further down the order, but the team that I keep wondering about is San Francisco. They need offensive line help in a major way. And at 31, I think they run the risk of none of those great offensive tackles being there. Beyond that, this is a team that's got a lot of draft picks somehow. And we know that their GM, John Lynch, is not afraid of being bold. And with so few needs on their roster, San Francisco feels like one of those teams that could be sort of on the prowl as we go through that offensive tackle run, somewhere starting around as early as 7 and probably going all the way through the mid-20s.
Field, any position 3 years from now, which player in this draft, especially this first round, is going to have the most impact in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, quarterbacks, I'll defer to them just because they can impact the game so much in every single play. But it's Marvin Harrison Jr. I'd love to come on the show and give you guys some super unique, you know, thoughtful answer. And it's like a player you haven't been talking a whole lot about. But part of the reason why Marvin Harrison Jr. deserves to be in the consideration for the best players in the draft, regardless of position, is that he has been circumstance agnostic, right? Past two years, has 28 receiving touchdowns. That's the most in the FBS. Last year with Kyle McCord, playing a very different game than CJ Stroud, he still had a monster season. You know, he's so good in pretty much every way. He has this excellent body control, just elite at the catch point. 50-50 balls for him are like 80-20 balls. He's so smooth after the catch as well. It looks so effortless that, well, I don't know his exact 40 time. He never ran one during the pre-draft process. If you told me it was like 4.38 or 4.40, I'd say that tracks for a guy that's 209 pounds. So much of what he brings to the table is pro ready. So give me Marv as my standout 3 years from right now. We should not overthink that one at all.
Field Yates chopping at the bit, ready to go right now. He is primed for Detroit. Field, safe travels. Best of luck, brother. We're all excited to watch you, Saban, and everybody else cut it loose Thursday night, brother. Thank you.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. Have a great week over there in Boston. I'm jealous. And it's some of the best to everybody there.
Thanks, Field. He's going to be awesome.
Oh, my God. He's going to be absolutely phenomenal. Be one of the best there is.
Yeah.
All right, time to finish off the show the way we always do. This, that, and the third, three quick stories to send you into the rest of your day. As always, download, subscribe, rate, review us. Leave us a 5-star rating. Check us out here live Monday through Friday from 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. Plenty of great draft coverage all this week in the lead up. Plenty of awesome prospects going to come on and join us as we lead up to the weekend that changes most of their lives here. So catch us live when you can, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Catch the best of Gojo and Golic Veasan on the radio from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern. And if you miss any of it live or our great guest, shout out to Field Yates, who just joined us. ESPN NFL draft analyst, going to be part of the ABC broadcast in Detroit this weekend. You can get that wherever you get your podcasts or right here as soon as we get done on YouTube. All right, guys, let's get to this, that, and the third here. The offseason's fun for NFL players because sometimes we see them in different settings, exploring their other passions. Jameis Winston is no exception. Always one of the bigger personalities in the league. Last time we saw him on a football field, he was helping engineer that late touchdown in the Saints game that pissed everybody right off. Now Jameis is doing interviews with fish. He was a part of a CBS broadcast of the catch on a fishing boat, and it turned into this.
Fish, I'm flapping away, swim away, fish. You're not going nowhere. We got you on the boat right now. What do you have to say for yourself? Oh, we got you. Oh, your cousin came. Your cousin came. Well, we have it, folks. We just cut the line. We have two family members of the tuna. If you were wondering, I asked the question too. Why do fish flap when they're out the water? A wise friend told me that they're just simply trying to swim away. Well, fish, how does it work swimming in the air? They didn't really have a response. Sometimes no response is the best response at all.
Vegans are screaming.
They're dying!
I was going to say,
Jameis. Why are they flopping around?
They're drowning.
They don't have air. They're flopping around because they're dying. What the hell was that?
That's pretty twisted, man.
Oh, my God.
Not going to lie, that got a little macabre at the end.
That's dark.
That is dark. He's quiet.
Now, why are they flapping? I don't know, because their life's passing before their eyes right now. You talked about his cousin. He's sitting there watching his boy die next to him, too. My name is Jesus.
I guarantee you that got X up in a storm. Oh, all the wildlife people.
Something Jameis has said or done, alarming people? I'm
not
shocked.
The first time.
Are they flopping?
Yeah, why are they? I mean,
serious?
I mean,
I don't even know what to say to that. I love fishing. I'm a kind of a catch and release guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Mostly bass fishing, but holy smokes.
Yeah, you're still jettisoning in a sharp object through their face, which I'm sure isn't
super
chill.
They're on the boat deck flopping around.
Yeah. I asked a friend, why do they flop around?
Why do they flop around?
They should have gone out there and held Jameis underwater. And we're like, Jameis, why are you flopping around?
Why are you flopping around?
What's going on here, brother?
What's wrong?
Trying to get air or something?
Absolute wild boy move there from Jameis Winston here.
Let's move on from that.
Yeah, Claudia, let's go from that to a slightly more wholesome content here with Jim Harbaugh deciding to go and get splatted up.
I was going to say from quirky players to quirky coaches, right?
The better teams.
Just a little safer for nature. Harbaugh got a tattoo because he promised his team he would if they went 15-0, and that's exactly what they did, so that's exactly what he did, and I don't know where he went. If you're not watching this, it's not the best art, and that's no shade. I mean, you know, it's straight, but it's not anything special.
I agree. I thought the M would be better.
Well, like as much as I have, you know, from my playing days, hold over, you know, resentment towards Michigan because they were a big rival for us. I didn't like them then. The block M is an iconic logo in college.
Yeah.
It's big, it's powerful. Yeah. The yellow, while I think maize, even Michigan fans would admit, is a pretty ugly color, I can understand him not including that there, but the block M, I thought was going to get more of the treatment there. That's just a normal M.
That's just a normal M. I get not putting any color to it. You know, I understand that, but I'm not very impressed. Now he did it. He paid it up, right?
He did it.
All good.
Well, and I mean, listen, if you win a championship event, like God, we were getting ready to play in the national championship they in the lead up to that, like the seniors and upperclassmen on the team, we got to see mock-ups of the rings. Like we got to help design what would have been our championship rings, which is still to this day the most triggering experience I've ever been a part of. I'm not kidding you. I walked out of that room and right into the weight room. I was like, got to do more. Got to do extra. I need this thing. But I was also like planning out, like if we get this done, crystal ball tattoo on the inside of my...
You were tatted up already. Oh. What kind of a tattoo do you think you'd have gotten?
Oh, I mean, leprechaun, shot of the grotto, golden dome all surrounding the crystal ball, which is still the greatest championship trophy in the history of collegiate sports. The fact that now it has taken a back burner to the giant, heinous CFP gold trophy, to me, is one of the biggest crimes. They still give out the coach's trophy, but it's in like a quiet ceremony. I was always afraid it would get broken. I had that front and center lined up for the arm there. It was going to be... Oh, God.
Oh, so you had something all set to go.
Oh, I was ready to go, man. You fail to prepare, your prayer to fail. That's day one stuff. So prior preparation.
That much you were going to get done?
Yeah. Win a national championship. That's why I'm a little bit surprised. Jim went more tasteful, understated times New Roman.
Jim doesn't have any of the tattoos. I didn't expect him to go whole hog. Now you, you have a lot of ink, so I would expect you to do something.
He might have to go back and get that redone. I'm sure he's going to get some flack. Like, you can do a thin lining. I don't have any tattoos, but I'm assuming he can
go
back.
You know, end champs next to that?
I mean, 15-0 kind of spells that out, one would assume.
Yeah. I guess so,
It just was lacking. It seemed it was asking was, for more.
It seemed like, because he certainly doesn't look like a tattoo guy, that he was trying to do as minimal as possible.
Yeah.
Which is what I would do, because everybody, you, Jake, Sydney, your mother, all have tattoos. I'm the only one in the family in the immediate family who doesn't have a tattoo. So if I had to like that, I probably would have got the bare minimum as well.
Mm. Yeah, it reeks it reeks like old military tattoo, where it's, hey, like, this is, we're just doing it. We're conveying information
here
forever on your
skin. No flair, no nothing, just the info.
You know what? Simple.
15-0.
To the point.
Enough said.
That's going to go really well over in the trailer park with him and Giro out there.
I was
show
just
off the fresh ink. I got to imagine Greg Roman's got some tattoos somewhere. His probably tied to a knife. He seems like a guy that like would get a tattoo in a really interesting situation in a bar called Dirty Nelly's or something like that. What do I know, though?
I was going to say, how do we know you didn't get any tats at Dirty Nelly's?
You know what? Based on my state at the end of that night, if you told me I woke up and had a new tattoo somewhere, I'd have believed.
Tortured poets.
No, don't even. Because you got tattoos from a couple different places, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my God. I can do it with a broken heart somewhere on here.
Have you ever gotten a drunk tattoo?
No, not yet. They usually don't let do that.
Because you say not yet?
Well, they usually, most reputable places will not let you do that because alcohol thins out your blood, so you'll bleed everywhere if you go and do that. But you can always find a spot. Trust me. I know a guy.
I was
going to
say, I bet you could find somebody.
We could find a couple of very impressive golfers to finish this whole thing off with.
Yes.
Here.
Scotty.
Porta on an absolute tear right now.
Yeah, I mean, nobody better. I think Scottie Scheffler, we could say he's okay.
Yeah,
he's won four of his last five events now.
Right?
Girl power, baby. No, but she has been unreal. She won her second major championship title. She is taking over headlines, though. Fifth straight LPGA event marks the third time only that someone has done that. So, yes, Scottie Scheffler continues to dominate, but Nelly Korda taking over.
Yeah, so Heritage was done this morning, Monday morning, and Scottie Scheffler finished that off and won that. So he won four of the last five.
How about this? Win at the Arnold Palmer, win at the Players, tied for second at the Houston Open, won the Masters, and then followed that up winning at RBC.
And
ridiculous.
Only to be outdone by Nelly Korda, who, as Claudia mentioned, won five in a row. The only other two to do it, I mean, obviously two of the greatest, Nancy Lopez in 78 and Annika Sorenstam as well, did it both 2004, 2005. So, I mean, incredible job by Nelly Korda there.
Yeah, it's been an impressive stretch of golf. I mean, both of these, the world number ones right now on their respective sides of the sports here. And Scottie Scheffler, Dad, I mean, no signs of slowing down. 10 events so far, 10 top 20 finishes, 9 in the top 10. It's been a ridiculous level of consistency for the best ball striker in the sport.
So now are we going, you know, Scottie Scheffler versus the field? We did that with Tiger for years.
Yeah.
I do wonder if we'll finally get an era out of somebody. It's been so close for so many of these big name guys. Scottie Scheffler's certainly not the biggest personality, but what, 27 years old, going into the prime of his golf career right
just
now?
Just absolutely.
What have I done?
Yeah. Oh, God. Don't get me started on young people who continue to accomplish more than me. I'm sick of all of you right here. Don't get sick of us. We'll be here on this couch all week, getting you ready for all the great nuggets leading to the 2024 NFL Draft. Download, subscribe, rate, review us. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.